Zappi off a play fake. Throws it left. Henry in the end zone. Makes the catch. Dives in. Touchdown, Patriots.
Three touchdowns by number four tonight. Bailey Zappi has come to play, baby.
And the Patriots came to play last night. 21 points in the first half. Didn't score a point in the second half of Thursday Night Football, but win in Pittsburgh against the Steelers. Patriots 2-10 going into the game. Steelers 7-5. Bailey Zappi throws three touchdown passes, including the one you heard there. They're up 21-3, and they hold on to win 21-18. Snaps their five-game losing streak. They're now 3-10 on the year. The loss knocked the Steelers out of the playoff spot. For now, they're 7-6. The Steelers are the first team in NFL history with a winning record to lose consecutive games to teams that were at least eight games under 500, and they did it at home in both games. Last week, lost to 2-10 Arizona. This week, they lose to 2-10. Actually, they did it twice in 6 days. 2-10 Arizona on Sunday. 2-10 Patriots last night. You don't deserve to be in the playoffs if you can't beat teams like that, especially when you're at home. And which the thing is, you know, as a Chiefs fan, I think you should have been sitting there cheering for the Steelers to win last night. I know I was, because if the Steelers fall out of a playoff spot, that gives even more of a chance that the Bills get into the playoffs. And if the Bills beat the Chiefs this weekend, there's a good chance the Bills are, well, they will be right back in it. They'll be they'll be maybe half game, a game out of the last wild card, and we know they're very talented. So, you know, the more teams that can be ahead of Buffalo, I'm cool with, because I still think Buffalo is a threat to the Chiefs. I know they've had some struggles. They've been up and down, but they're a team that I think might be starting to find themselves a little bit, and we'll talk about that coming up here later on in the Sports Ticket. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We got a lot to get to here. Jerome Tang with a statement to the K-State fan base, which we'll play here in a little bit. KU has a new offensive coordinator for their football team, and it is a terrific hire, at least on paper. The NBA in-season tournament is down to the championship matchup. LeBron did something nobody's ever done before last night, which is pretty impressive. There's another golfer that's defected, the LIV Golf, and we'll go through the NFL. Plus, if we have time, the Royals are supposedly wanting to spend money and get some starting pitching. So, hey, maybe there's hope for the Royals after all. Of course, just because you want to spend money doesn't mean they want to come and play for the Kansas City Royals. That would be a good counterpoint as well. All right, local sports from yesterday, Dusty.
Yeah, we had basketball and wrestling yesterday for the area, as we had in the basketball Amos Moore semis in Russell. The Smith Center girls winning over Ellsworth 65-60 to move on to the championship game. And then the consolation semis, Smith Center falling to Plainville 47-35 as the Redmen moved to the seventh place game coming up on Saturday there in Russell. Then in the Fairfield Falcon Classic boys semis, Stafford beating Lincoln 44-39. So Lincoln moves to the third place game where they'll play Pretty Prairie. And then the girls consolation semis, Otis Bison beat Lincoln 51-17. And on the girls side, Lincoln will play Chase for seventh place later today in that Fairfield Falcon Classic. So that's the update on the area teams that were playing basketball last night. Also in high school wrestling, the Beloit Trojans were hosting a duel with Abilene, as Abilene won that one 52-28 over Beloit. That's what we had for activities yesterday. We got in preview wrestling here real quick today. Beloit will be at the Ellis Round Robin here this afternoon, and that's at 2 o'clock. And then the other teams from our area, the immediate area, Osborne's at Minneapolis tomorrow, the Jeff Giles Invitational at 9:30 tomorrow morning, and Smith Center will be at the Manhattan Duels coming up tomorrow at 10 o'clock. So that's an update on where everybody will be at here this weekend as far as wrestling is concerned. High school basketball will continue on today as well, and we have hoops action on Katy Couch 94.
You have wrestling. You were going wrestling. Is there wrestling today? Did you already go over
yep,
that?
Yep, went
I
over
that?
All
my
of
bad.
That. Yep.
My bad. I'm trying to do three things at
yep,
once.
Yep, I can tell.
Yeah.
High school basketball continues on today as we have coverage on Katy Couch 94. KatyCountry94.com, Z96 Point through the lake as well. We'll go through the entire schedule here first, and then we'll preview the games that are coming up here on our stations. Again, I'll preview preseason tournament here momentarily on Katy Couch 94 there in Downs. And then also it'll be Beloit on the road at Southeast Saline tonight on Z96 Point through the lake. We'll hear from both coaches from Beloit about those matchups. Here this evening, other games that are going on this afternoon and evening, the Amos Morris Classic Semis in Russell, the St. John Tipton girls taking on Phillipsburg in the semis at 6:30, and the boys will play Phillipsburg as well for the Blue Jays at 8 o'clock for the right to move on to the championship games. And the consolation semis will be this afternoon. with Sylvan Lucas competing in those games against Central Plains on both girls and boys. Girls at 3:30, the boys are at 4:30. It's interesting how some of these brackets just fell, and it's the same matchup with each side of the bracket and not playing that way because it's the same way at the Trigo Purple and Gold semifinals here this evening, as the Osborne girls and boys are both playing Hodgman County. The girls' semifinal matchup at 6 o'clock in Waukini, and the boys play at 7:30. And the Tascket tip-off finishes up today in Tascket. Southern Cloud takes on Lynn in the first doubleheader, 3 o'clock girls, 4:30 boys. Tascket and Natoma will be the nightcap at 6 and 7:30. Thunderbird Invitational, Pike Valley's at Blue Valley Randolph tonight, regular times, as it's just one set of games there with girls varsity at 6. And then Concordia hosts Smoky Valley tonight as well. In high school hoops, if you're wondering what the high school schedule looks like for your favorite teams, no matter what the winter sport is here, you can always visit nckssports.com with the latest standing schedule, scores, athlete of the week, and much more right there at the website. Again, today on Katy Country 94, we get things started in the afternoon as we have the Highway 24-36 preseason tournament, day two of three. Pre-game coverage beginning at 3:20, tip-off at 3:30. The Rock Hills and Stockton teams will play in the first doubleheader. In the girls' game, the Lady Grizzlies are 1-1. Stockton comes in at 2-0, a matchup where Stockton's had a decent start to the season, probably not where they want to be offensively yet based on what I saw on Tuesday, but Rock Hills coming off of a nice win over Lakeside as well, so an interesting girls' matchup there and an interesting boys' matchup as well. It'll be 2-0-2 teams, Rock Hills and Stockton both looking for their first wins of the season, and Rock Hills definitely had their chances in a couple of these outings the first time around and really kind of had some tough second quarters in both of those games, and they're looking for their first win here. Stockton's definitely made improvements, but they're on a long losing streak at the moment, still looking for their first win really since the 2020-21 season. So again, it is Rock Hills and Stockton at the preseason tournament today. Nightcap doubleheader, the Thunder Ridge Longhorns and Lakeside Knights will meet. The girls game slated for about a 6:30 tip-off. The Lady Knights are 1-1. Thunder Ridge is 0-1. The boys' game that follows, the records are reversed. Lakeside's 2-0. Thunder Ridge is 1-0. Both teams looking to stay unbeaten early this season. That girls' contest between Lakeside and Thunder Ridge. Interested to see how the Lady Knights come back out after a tough loss to Rock Hills there on Tuesday and what they respond with here today. Again, Thunder Ridge has only had one game, so not a big sample size of what we see from the girls here coming into this game. And into the boys' game, really looking forward to this one. Lakeside is 2-0 again. Thunder Ridge 1-0, a very young Thunder Ridge team, but they got contributions from their guys that were returning, Austin Barnes and Evan Slavic last time out, and Lakeside's playing without Jace Cunningham still, so it could be an interesting matchup there with Lakeside and Thunder Ridge. Again, that'll be around 8 o'clock tip-off. You can catch all the games on Katy Country 94 and also online at katycountry94.com from Downs here today, and then we'll have four games tomorrow as well. Check out the schedule at nckssports.com.
Yeah, pregame about 1:20 tomorrow on a Saturday, so Dusty with all kinds of games to do. 12 games to do this week, three days of four games in a row,
eight games in a whatever,
yeah,
36 hour span maybe or something like that. I don't know what that comes out to. Less than that, I guess.
Back in the day when the NPL tournament was up in Concordia, how many games did you do in a row?
There was one day where I had seven out of the eight games on the radio.
I don't know how you're it's hard to believe that you can keep your voice going on that.
By the end of that, you're calling boys girls and girls boys. That's not the Lady Panthers playing. What are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. I hear that. All right, the game tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. Live video stream, nckssports.com, and the Wood Trojan Channel. It's a battle of Trojans again. It's been a good rivalry for many, many years, but it's been one-sided recently. Beloit Southeast Saline will play down in Rural Gypsum tonight. We'll start with the girls' game. Both teams are 1-1. Southeast of Saline went 3-0 against Beloit last year. They won 9 in a row against the Lady Trojans. Last time Beloit beat Southeast of Saline in girls' basketball, got to go back to December of 2019. Southeast Saline losing Reagan Getz, who's an outstanding player last year that really had Beloit's number, but they have Brielle Potocic back. They have Maddie Harris, who's a three-time All-Leaguer back. She's finally a senior. She's one of those players where you feel like she has 8 years of eligibility. But Beloit certainly looks improved this year. Their first two games gave Clay Center a tussle. Clay Center ranks sixth in 4A. And Sean Remus, head coach of Beloit, expects another solid Southeast team tonight.
They're very talented again. You know, they've got some really good guards that have been in the program for a long time, and they're good little shooters, and they drive hard, and they defend hard. And we should have a size advantage going into the game, so we should, you know, obviously win the rebounding battle. But we're just going to have to take control of the ball, and then, you know, just find the ways to get stops when we need them and buckets when we need them as well.
So Beloit Southeast Saline girls, both teams 1-1. Beloit with the win early in the year over Concordia, then the loss to Clay Center. Southeast Saline with a loss to Heston, but a win last week against Smoky Valley. Lexi Jacobson had 16 points and 14 rebounds in that one. Brecken Boudreaux led the way for Beloit in the last game with 15 off the bench. In the boys' contest, Beloit continues their early season revenge tour, if you want to call it that. Well, last year they started the year 0-3, lost to Concordia, and then lost to Clay Center, and then lost to Southeast Saline. And this year so far, they have paid back Concordia. They paid back Clay Center in exciting fashion earlier this week, scoring the final 8 points a game and win 58-56. And now they get a Southeast Saline team that's had their number. Southeast Saline beat Beloit three times last year, ended Beloit's season. Southeast Saline ended the Beloit girls' season last year as well. So there's all kinds of things that Beloit kind of owes Southeast just a little bit. Southeast Saline boys won all three times against Beloit a year ago, ending the season for Beloit out at Russell in the sub-state finals when Beloit went 17-6. Their three of their six losses to Southeast of Saline. Southeast Saline lost nine seniors, really super talented class that went back-to-back third place finishes at state, went 24-2 a year ago. Southeast has won 23 games in a row in league play. They've beaten Beloit seven straight times. They are 1-1 after a season-opening loss to number 2 ranked in 3A and three-time defending state champion Heston, but they bounced back with a 55-41 win over Smoky Valley on Tuesday. Salina South transfer Owen Bailey had 34 points and 8 threes at Smoky Valley. He's the only Southeast Saline player to hit double figures this season, but Southeast has been on the road so far. This is their first game at home, and it seems like there's always a player for Southeast Saline that you don't expect to hit some threes that does against Beloit. It's just been the way it's been the last few years, although thankfully Luke Gebhardt has finally graduated. He's the one that's been kind of a thorn in Beloit's side. He'll average like 5-6 points and then go off for 15 every time he plays Beloit. Beloit's 2-0, a big win over Concordia, the comeback win against Clay Center. Tonight, they look to snap that 7-game losing streak to Southeast Saline. If Beloit wants to win the league title, which is one of their goals this year, they're going to have to beat Southeast of Saline. These two teams will play again on February 6th in Beloit. Ryan Islett, head coach of Beloit, respecting the group the Southeast has despite only having one starter back.
They're going to be different personnel. Their philosophy is going to be the same. You know, I do think they have some athletes that followed those kids from a year ago that'll be able to do some of the same stuff that probably bothered us last year. And so, you know, we've got to come out, show that we're making progress each game and you know, just see kind of what they provide and go from there. But, you know, I like where we are. I think we're in the right mindset. So looking forward to going over there on Friday.
So that will be the matchup tonight on Z96.3 Lake and live video stream, ncksports.com, Beloit at Southeast of Saline. Turn our attention to college basketball. It is the Border Showdown in Lawrence. Number 2 ranked Jayhawks 8-1, Missouri 7-2. Also on Saturday at halftime, former KU big man Thomas Robinson will have his jersey retired. It's appropriate. He's the one that blocked Missouri's shot there in that crazy comeback back in, I think it was 2012, against Missouri, when what was the last time they had played until 2021, almost 10-year absence between Missouri and KU playing when Missouri decided to defect to the SEC. Pregame is at 3:30 coming up tomorrow, and tip-off at 4:15 between the Jayhawks and the Tigers. Last couple of meetings since they resumed their rivalry on the hardwood has been all KU. KU blew out Missouri a couple years ago in Lawrence. They blew out Missouri and Columbia last year, and it should be a special day. Thomas Robinson in the house, his jersey retired, and they play Missouri. Here's Bill Self on what he expects coming up on Saturday.
It's going to be great. You know, it'll only be special, though, if you win the game. But Thomas is excited about being here, and his family is as well. And it should be a lot of fun.
If they win, yes, it'll be a lot of fun. If they lose, that puts a big damper. I don't expect KU to lose. They'll be up and going for this one. I don't know if they'll beat them by, you know, 30 or whatever it is like they've done before, but it should be an interesting game. KU and Missouri, 3:30 pregame tomorrow on Z96.3 The Lake. Coming up in 30 seconds, Jerome Tang's message to the K-State fan base that has absolutely lost their freaking mind.
Son of a...
Batteries are on sale now at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Don't wait till it won't start. Stop by today for a free battery test. We always install batteries for free, but right now, AC Delco batteries are on sale $20 off. If you do need a jump, we're happy to help you with that too. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or online at KieberBrothers.com.
K-State family, I really need you to hear my heart on this. We love Naquan Tomlin, and we are hurting for him. And we love this university. I love this university. Every aspect of this university. I am in love with this university because of the special synergy that exists between the community, the university, and athletics. And we have to keep that moving forward. We have to move forward with love and togetherness and unity. Nothing fills my heart more than when I walk across campus and I see how we love each other. And so I'm asking you, all of us, to let's move forward with love. We elevated this program with love. We made this all about KSU. And I'm asking you to help me, help all of us, make this about KSU and spreading love. Can't wait to see you guys in Brown. Go Cats.
Well, what do you know? There's somebody that has a level head that actually knows how to be a calming influence. Thank you, Jerome Tang. That was a message he put out there, hanging with Tang there on the couch that they do each week. Jerome Tang bringing some sense of normalcy and reality to the K-State fan base that, honestly, I think they were all literally going to jump off a cliff and end it all. Every single fan in K-State. Okay, maybe not everyone. We didn't have a lot of time to talk about this yesterday because we had so much going on, and Brian Heaney was scheduled to be with us like he is every Thursday to talk KU sports. And we talked about, listen, there's more than likely way more to this story than what's being reported. I don't know, maybe not way more, but there's definitely got to be some details we're not getting. And then there was the anger, and it was kind of almost not a lynch mob, not a... you know, a riot, but it was a social media riot in regards to fire Richard Linton, not Litton. You know, here's a funny thing. If you want to fire somebody, maybe you should know what the hell their name is. But Richard Linton, okay, is the president of Kansas State University. And yesterday, Jerome Tang and one of his assistants, they went out and talked to students that were protesting, wanting to free Naquan Tomlin, upset with President Linton and the protest at his house or in his residence, at his residence or on campus, whatever. Jerome Tang and one of his assistants, at least it was those two, maybe more, they went out and they were talking to students about, hey, you know, let's chill out, man. Let's chill out. Let's love. That's the word, right? That's what he just said. And they were talking to kids about, hey, focus on your academics, get the class, pass your classes, so forth and so on. You know, the way the K-State fan base has reacted, you would think that Richard Linton murdered somebody. Is that too far?
Not on some of it.
No, based on some people's reaction, they wanted the guy hung from a tree. I ain't kidding you. You should see the comments. It's ridiculous. And most of those people making those comments never met Naquan Tomlin. I don't even know if someone have ever gone to a K-State basketball game, to be honest with you. So it's you know, garbage. A lot of social media and Twitter is garbage. But Jerome Tang all of a sudden calmed the waters because he is highly respected by the fans and the students. And it was a great message he put out there. And it is interesting what happens if you actually step back and chill out before you start ranting and raving. And I know I've ranted and raved before too, but guess what? I would say probably 95 to 99% of the time when I rant or rave on the show, I've already thought about it quite a bit before I do it. I just don't go off the cuff ranting and raving. There are ideas I have in my head, how I want to present it. I may get fired up at times on the show as I get into the discussion. But there, the instant, when you instantly get on social media, when you instantly get on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, whatever it might be, TikTok, whatever, videos, and you can't erase it. Oh, I erased it. No, it's there forever, friends. Trust me, it's all there. That can be used against you down the line. And so we threw it out there yesterday that what if Richard Linton has two bad choices to choose from? He has the choice of being unpopular with the fan base and the media releasing information saying basically that Tang and Taylor were on board with keeping Tomlin on the team and Richard Linton was against it, and then used Gene Taylor as a shield is what some people accuse of what happened with the statement that was released the other night. And you and I were talking about this off the air yesterday after the show that You know, first of all, there's lots of rumors out there, and there's rumors that something, you know, was worse than what actually is being reported, even by the police department in their report, by various people with Naquan Tomlin at that bar in October. There are people going back and forth arguing, no, that didn't happen. Others saying, yes, absolutely, it did happen. People like, where's the video? Which sometimes there's video, sometimes there isn't, so forth and so on. And here's the thing. If Naquan Tomlin did something so egregious, he would not have been allowed to sit on the bench with K-State. He wouldn't have been able to go up in the stands and celebrate with the student section after beating Villanova. And Richard Linton more than likely would not have allowed him to still be on the team. Now, you got to remember, this is a guy that before this incident in October, he wasn't eligible there for a little while. He was going to declare for the NBA draft, or people thought he was going to. He decided to come back. He has some things that's probably going on in his life that are protected by whether it be HIPAA or privacy laws that he's entitled to. And thank God he has them. All of us have those rights, by the way, not because you're just a student athlete. You have all kinds of rights. And so mental health is a big thing now. Obviously, I've been saying it for years that when we talk about all the problems with guns and everything else, it's like the gun doesn't shoot itself. Okay, somebody has to pull the trigger. So it's the person that has the gun that's either irresponsible, doesn't know what they're doing, or has some issues. Obviously, it needs to be addressed that isn't being addressed. Mental health. If you solve mental health, I can assure you there will be less mass shootings in this country. I can assure you of that. I can guarantee it. I can guarantee it. If you can get more mental health professionals out there, have more mental health professionals, people get the help they need sooner, we'll have less suicides, we'll have less mass shootings and murders. It's just, I mean, seriously, it doesn't really take a rocket scientist to figure that out and put the two together. Now, athletes go through all kinds of stresses, and here's the thing. Naquan Tomlin can say whatever he wants to say if he chooses to about his situation. But when you are the university president or athletic director or coach, your hands are tied in regards to certain things that you can say or reveal to the media. And if you say the wrong thing and you violate some kind of policy or even a privacy law, guess what? You're in deep doo-doo. You're in trouble. You might get a lawsuit from Naquan Tomlin and his family for crying out loud. Perhaps what Richard Linton had was, we're all just talking here, but Richard Linton could have easily been like, you know what, I'm okay with Tomlin still, you know, being a part of the team. Jerome Tang had said earlier in the year, you know, we're treating this less like a season-ending injury, but he also said that it's important that Naquan is still connected to the team, okay, which to me is a mental health thing, okay, without saying it. I don't know that for sure, but I'm sure if you're a player and you're not allowed to play, the worst thing that would happen is you can't be in touch with the team.
Yeah,
want to be totally disconnected. So the fact that you can still be a part of it at least smooths over some of the tough times for you as an individual. I mean, just put yourself in the shoes of Naquan Tomlin. You know, is the best case scenario he plays? Of course. Yeah. What's the worst case scenario? You're isolated. You're kicked off the team, which now he is. So I believe that. First of all, Jerome Tang and Gene Taylor have never said that Naquan Tomlin was going to be reinstated. They've never said that. And for all we know, he was never going to be reinstated. And Naquan Tomlin knew that. Richard Linton knew that. Gene Taylor knew that. Jerome Tang knew that. And then, of course, when the media reports came out that, you know, Coach Tang and Taylor and in his court, and Richard Linton's upset, or not upset, but that, you know, he's holding this all back. And then when it became a big fiasco with the students going crazy and wanting to do all these protests and wanting to fire Richard Linton, I think the K-State brass, or maybe it's just Richard Linton, who knows, said, listen, we did the kid a solid. We let him still be a part of this organization, this team. But he's not going to play. We all know he's not going to play this year. And so now we need to cut the cord because this is way too big a distraction. We can't do this moving forward. And Naquan Tomlin may have been all along, that's what he wanted, because he may have very well known that he wasn't going to be reinstated. And so thus now, with him not being on the team, he can graduate here in December, and he can be a grad transfer, and he can play for KU, believe it or not, or Georgetown, West Virginia. He can walk on somewhere, whatever he wants to do. He can go play basketball. So what people really haven't done, and this is what you don't do when you immediately jump on social media and you scream and yell and kick and scream some more and throw out insults at people and then demand people to be fired, is first of all, you don't have all the information that Richard Linton has, I can assure you. You don't have all the information Gene Taylor has, I can assure you. You don't have all the information Jerome Tang has, I can assure you. And you don't have all the information that Naquan Tomlin has, I can assure you. Okay, and I guarantee you, no offense to Tim Fitzgerald, but he doesn't have all the information either. Now, Fitz, I think, has solid information. So I want to make this clear. I think Fitz is doing his job. And if there's questions about leadership, it should be brought out into the open. Whether it's your president of your country, whether it's your mayor of your town, whether it's a city council, board, school president. I mean, I don't care if they're elected officials, a leader, publicly paid, a coach, an AD, a president, a board of regents. If there's something that is not right or is messed up and somebody knows about it, they should report it. They should at least throw it out there. So I have no problem with what Tim Fitzgerald did, per se. And I want to say one other thing. Everybody keeps coming back to, well, the police report doesn't say anything about anybody hitting anybody, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you something. This is what I find very ironic, and it doesn't make any sense. And if K-State fans would actually step back, and some of the people in the media covering K-State, if they would step back for a second and understand what they're saying, what you're basically saying is, well, there's nothing in the police report about Naquan Tomlin doing what these rumors say, and he had his diversion, so he should be able to play. Ben Roethlisberger was never proven guilty of anything, right? And he was suspended for games. How many NFL players have been suspended due to violating the conduct policy in the National Football League? And a lot of those cases, there's no charges by police against any of these people, okay? I mean, Calvin Ridley bet on NFL games. That's not illegal, but it is violating NFL policy. So if you want to sit here and say, well, the reason he should play is because, hey, he had a diversion and the police have moved on. Well, that doesn't mean that Naquan Tomlin didn't violate particular policies that are near and dear to the Kansas State University or the team itself.
Yeah.
Okay? Listen, I can tell you just from experience, if you're underage on a high school sports team, we signed something way back in the day when I played high school sports that you, underage, could not be drinking. Okay? And if you got busted drinking, you were suspended or off the team. Well, guess what? If you find out, if coach runs into you at a party and you're holding a beer and drinking it, the cops didn't see that. They didn't charge you with MIP, did they? But the coach knows you violated the policy.
Yeah.
So he's going to suspend you. Wait a minute. You can't suspend him. The cops didn't charge him. What kind of thinking is that?
Yeah.
Every company has policies. There's a handbook of rules in most companies. And it has nothing to do with criminal activity. It's about, here's our standards at our company. The university is a business, believe it or not. It's a public university at Kansas State. And so there are policies that are in place, and we don't know exactly what policies or exactly all the things that Naquan Tomlin broke. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but I can tell you that I don't think Richard Linton, first of all, I think if you become a president of a university, you're not a stooge and an idiot. So I would guess that Richard Linton, once again, I'm guessing here, but I would imagine Richard Linton's got some pretty good information and or at least pretty good reasoning for doing what he's done. I'm not saying he's doing the right thing. I don't know. I don't have the information. But I'd be willing to bet you that he has information that he can't reveal, and that's what K-State said in their statement because of privacy laws. They can't reveal this information, which actually helps protect Naquan Tomlin. Okay? What if there are some other incidents where it's a mental health situation and you go spewing this stuff out there and you leak it out, find out, yo, the president leaked this information, there's a lawsuit coming, big time. So you got to be very careful with this. If Naquan Tomlin wants to come out about these things on his own, that's up to him. Now, if there's something confidential that he, Jerome Tang, Gene Taylor, and Richard Linton agreed to and signed a confidentiality agreement, and Naquan Tomlin goes out and tells Tim Fitzgerald or somebody else something about that, now he's in trouble because he's violated something. So there are so many different tentacles to this that a lot of people have not taken the time to step back and look at. All right. And based on Jerome Tang's comment yesterday, I don't think Jerome Tang is irate and livid. And what sent K-State people over the edge was what Tim Fitzgerald and others were saying, and that was, well, president undermines the coach. Why is the coach going to want to hang around? It reminded K-State fans of the John Curry, Frank Martin situation, which this is different because it's a president, not an AD, but maybe worse because it's coming from the president. And so people just absolutely lost their freaking lid. And they're like, oh my God, we're going to lose Tang. And so we better go protest and get the president fired. That'll solve everything. And Jerome Tang's like, no, it's not. No, no, no. We need love here. This is not what we need. And it doesn't sound like, I don't know. I think eventually if Jerome Tang was upset with something, it would leak out. Now, it might not leak out yet. It may eventually leak out. But I don't know. He seems like a stand-up dude. His comment there, it seemed genuine from the heart. And I think if we, I believe that Naquan Tomlin was not going to play this year. That's what I believe. There are a lot of K-State fans that believe he was going to. There are a lot of K-State fans that, and media, that wanted him to play so bad that thus anything that fits their rationale and their agenda to push Naquan Tomlin to play, and they wanted him to play and counted on him to play, even though he was never told that he was going to play, but you had it in your mind he was going to play. Now you feel wronged, even though you've never met the kid possibly. Maybe you never met Coach Tang or Mr. Taylor or Mr. Linton, and you freak out because you're one going, son of a buck, we need Tomlin because we're not as good as we need to be to get back to Elite Eight. Secondly, oh my God, we're going to lose Jerome Tang. That's what Tim Fitzgerald and other people said because he was undermined by the president, and no wonder people lose their lid and freak out. And then before that, Colin Klein's leaving to go to Texas A&M. Oh my God, we might lose Avery Johnson. And then, so think about this. This has been the yo-yo roller coaster of K-State athletics in the last 3 days. Think about the roller coaster. All right? You beat Villanova. Everybody's going crazy. Everybody's happy. The very next morning, Colin Klein's leaving at Texas A&M. Oh, my God, we're going to lose Avery Johnson. Next thing you know, Naquan Tomlin, I want to be free, which we still don't know exactly what he meant by that. Did he mean free as in the play for K-State or free so he can go play elsewhere? Nobody's really talked about that still, I've noticed on social media. And so then Tomlin, then there's protests. And the next thing you know is Tang's going to leave because he's upset. And then 24 hours later, yesterday, Avery Johnson shows he's changing his number. And so he's going to play in the bowl game. And it looks like he's going to stay at K-State. And then Jerome Tang comes out and calms the waters with his comment, making everybody feel like he's not going to leave. He loves this place. He just said it, his own words, not mine. Dear God, what's going to happen today? I'm exhausted.
It's a heck of a roller coaster.
It's one of the biggest roller coasters in the world right now.
You know, we were talking like, I don't know, probably mid-September or something. It's a great time to be a K-State fan right now.
All the great things.
Like all the things that were going on with Tang. You know, basketball hadn't started yet, obviously. Naquan hadn't done what he did yet, right? Like, that was late October, right? And so, and we were even talking, hey, it's a good time to be a KU fan, too. You know, it's like, it's a good time to be a fan of both of the Big 12 universities in this state because things look like they're going in the right direction with whatever teams you're talking about. New volleyball coach at K-State, you're going the right way. You knew K-State women were going to have a pretty good team. It hadn't started yet, but it's like, oh, look at all the people that are coming in. Everything was going really good. And coming up roses, right? Like, you're excited about a lot at K-State.
You're riding high.
And then you decide to give up 5 touchdowns of more than 60 yards against Iowa State, or 74 more than 70.
Mm-hmm.
And then that night is when everything seemed to like just shift because the football season's over. And then the next day, the day after that, 15, 16, 17 guys, whatever it is now, are in the transfer portal. At least 14, I know that. Mm-hmm. They're in the transfer portal, right? Will Howard's leaving. He's not coming. Well, we knew that probably was going to happen anyway. But 2 other quarterbacks are leaving. And then now there's rumors that people want Colin Klein and he's gone. And Naquan Tomlin does this at the end of October and he's not playing. And when are we going to get him back? There was a lot of things there that changed the feeling of a lot of K-State fans at the moment in time. And we're dealing with it right now. It's going through. And I think a lot of fan bases of a lot of universities or pro sports teams, even whatever it is, will go through some of these times.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Where it's not going to be just always good for you. But I'm one of the people that's going to take a step back. I'm going to let this play out. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go screaming that we need to fire a university president. I'm not going to go screaming that Jerome Tang's going to leave if this doesn't get figured out, if he can't get Naquan Tomlin back.
Let me ask you a quick, hold that thought. Let me ask this question. wouldn't that be a horrible indictment on Jerome Ting as a person if he's ready to run at the first horrible adversity?
Absolutely.
But K-State fans just didn't let that sink in at all.
No, they don't. And so you sit here and then the things about that part of this just don't add up and make sense because – and, you know, I touched a little bit upon it yesterday, but you've got a university president that's going to make a decision that's going to hurt one of the best things that's happening at his university.
Yeah.
And just roll with that because of ego. And that's the only reason. Like, nah, it's just an ego trip. He's cleared to play. He should be able to play. I don't buy it. I never have. I never will.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy that Jerome Tang's going to leave after one incident like this.
Right.
This is not Frank Martin and John Curry at the moment right now. They clashed from the beginning.
Yes, yes.
We don't have that evidence between Jerome Tang and Richard Linton right now that they've clashed from the beginning. No. This is something that's going on within the program right now that's not great. And so, I see tweets from people that are, I know, just K-State fans and don't even... from what I understand, don't really have any inside info on the program other than what they're going to read from somebody else.
They're just regurgitating.
I saw somebody tweet yesterday that he knows people inside the locker room and said that Tang's ready to go right now and leave.
No.
And I'm like, no, dude, you don't know that. That's not true. Come on, dude. And listen, one thing I will say about the
statement. If it were true, he's the biggest liar of all time and the
absolutely.
Biggest fraud of all time.
But one thing I will say about the statement is that he's got to do that.
Sure.
And Gene Calm Taylor's got to put his name on this to say, hey, back off.
Right.
I don't know everything that's inside Jerome Tang's heart and mind right now.
Right.
But that statement there yesterday is a great way to show who he is as a person,
mm-hmm.
whether he wants to stay here or not. And whether he really will stay here in the end. And I don't think there's any issues with that. I've never bought it since it came out that he was going to leave because of this one thing. But you do have to move forward. You've got to go with the guys that you've got. And would Naquan Tomlin help this team? He would help this team immensely.
Sure.
Well, I mean, if you just watched what he did last year during the run. And so, yeah, is it not fun to lose him and part of something you thought maybe would be coming back when Big 12 play started? Yeah, it is. But now you got to roll with what you've got and you got to move on. Life's going to throw curveballs at you and you got to figure out how to move on. You know, the assistant coach that was with Jerome Tang yesterday was Jareem Dowling.
Okay, that's how I can remember.
And you're talking about the mental health aspect of this. And he actually just tweeted this morning that 13 years ago, his brother committed suicide mm-hmm. on his watch.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's one of those out there that's going to preach love too.
Yes.
And make sure everybody in your life is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why Naquan Tomlin was allowed to be a part of this.
Yeah. They still care about him.
But if Naquan rocks the boat and says, I want to be free,
mm-hmm.
and then this blows up and you've got, you know, protests saying, hey, we need to fire the president because of all this, and now this thing's blown up to a campus-wide thing, and kids aren't going to class and getting their finals done that are obviously coming up here, and graduation's not far away here in the winter, and so you got to get all that done. And you know, it's Jerome Tang and Jareem Dowling were out yesterday saying, hey, let's focus on classwork and let's get this done.
Yeah.
And that's not an act. That part of it mm-hmm. is without question real.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe it, just kind of look at the socials and see what they're doing. You know, I don't think any of this is an act based on what the coaching staff has proven over the last 2 years.
I agree. And what is kind of ironic to me is some K-State fans talk out both sides of their mouth and they say, well, do you really think that Naquan Tomlin did something so horrific that Jerome Tang would let him still be a part of the team and go celebrate with the student section after beating Villanova? And on the same time, they think Jerome Tang would immediately just leave because Richard Linton undermined him. Those two things contradict. Like, you're sitting here and saying, he doesn't give up on Tomlin, but he give up on the university just like that? That makes no sense. That makes no sense. Logically, there is no logic to that. And one more thing I want to say before we move on to K-State playing against LSU. This is a sports ticket brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. And I alluded to it earlier, but I didn't fully explain this. So people caught this. I want to explain it. So you and I were talking about this yesterday. Okay, it is very possible that Richard Linton has two bad options to choose from. And remember, he's the president of the university. The buck stops with this guy, all right? So he's the president. It's very possible there's two bad options. There's bad option number one, which has already happened, right? And then there's another option that's out there that might be worse. What if Richard Linton went ahead and just caved to all the pressure from the students and everybody else, and he let everybody run the university besides him, and he's been hired and paid a lot of money to do his job, so he can't let other people tell him how to do his job. He needs to do his job. So I believe he thinks he is,
yeah,
which I'm sure he is. And so what if Richard Linton has information that obviously can't be allowed publicly, so more than likely Coach Tang and Gene Taylor are aware of it, or who knows, maybe there's something Richard Linton knows that he can't tell them. I don't know. But what if, and there are rumors out there, and some rumors seem to be like, whoa, you know, this happened at this bar, and people are like, come on, and then other people say, no, that didn't happen. But what if there was something bad that's happened with Naquan Tomlin to where, and Richard Linton is like, you know what, I know that's going to look bad, I'm going to have to take this one, but we can't let him play because of this. And if I do let him play, and then later on people find out what I know, and it leaks out to the public, we got a major firestorm. You think you had the other day's a firestorm? We'd be a national firestorm. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I don't know what that smoking gun is. I think the comeback on that argument would be that if it is so bad, how could he still be on the team and then go up and celebrate with the students after being Villanova? And that is a good counterpoint, no doubt. But once again, without knowing the information, and I don't think there's any doubt that there's only probably four people in this equation, plus maybe some lawyers, that actually know, and some family members actually truly know what's going on. I don't know what's going on for sure. You don't. Tim Fitzgerald may know more than we do, but I can guarantee he doesn't have all the details. And maybe there are small, minute details that don't change anything. But I guarantee you there's certain stuff that we don't know because we're not allowed to know because of the statement they released, unless you think that's a complete BS and full lie. There's laws that you abide by, privacy laws, there's HIPAA laws, there's just the flat out that you have policies within your university that you can't comment on certain things. And so it makes it frustrating for students and for fans and for media when we don't get all the information that we crave and we want. But we still need to realize that we're not getting the full picture. And if we're not getting the full picture, do we overreact to the partial picture, or do we wait for the full picture to develop, which requires a thing that a lot of people don't have anymore, and that's called patience. Nobody has patience anymore that I'm aware of, except teachers. And there are some other people. Parents sometimes have to have patience. There is patience, but we are more likely to be impatient than be very patient. And so I'm with you. When this all broke, I was sitting there going, wow, this seems to be an extreme, extreme reaction to something that I didn't know needed to be that extreme. And there's no doubt it's been fueled by media. There's no question about this. You can't deny that.
And people that have influence all over social media,
absolutely,
not just media either.
Absolutely. And so if those media people truly tried to get a hold of President Linton to get his comments, maybe they did, maybe they don't, but they should have. And if Richard Linton says, listen, I'd love to talk to you, but I just can't. Well, now as a media person, you got to decide to run with what you got, which could help push a bit of a narrative or an agenda. Maybe you don't even realize the agenda you're pushing. And there's a person that can't say what they want to say because of all kinds of restrictions, whether it be, well, obviously, Gene Taylor can't say what he wants to say right now. Jerome Tang fully can't say what he wants to say. Clearly, Richard Linton can't. So those three men can't. And I would imagine Naquan Tomlin can't in various instances either. So thus, we don't have the full picture. So when you don't have the full picture, you don't have all the pieces to a puzzle. Is the puzzle clear and full and complete? No. No, it's far from it. So like you said, sometimes you just got to chill out, and sometimes it takes a while to gather all the facts. We can speculate all you want, but I will say this. When you have already made up your mind, and this is no different than politics in America, it is no different than the politician that you support, and we've seen this over the last, you know, so many years. It does not matter if what you believe in is truly wrong and everybody knows it. If you don't admit it, it don't matter. Because you want to put your foot in the sand, your head in the sand, whatever it might be, like, well, that doesn't fit my narrative, that doesn't fit my agenda, that doesn't fit my opinion, so you're wrong. That's how we are. So this is no different. you know, now K-State fans and protesters and students and whoever else are upset about this whole thing. Do you think they're going to change their tune right away and say, you know, Al, I thought about it? They might calm down because of Jerome Tang's comments, but they're still going to be upset with Richard Linton. And we don't even have all the information, or at least it seems to be. So, you know, it's one of those things where we rush to judgment. It's the way our society is. This is just a microcosm society. We rush to judgment as soon as somebody... Richard Jules, the greatest example of all time, I've mentioned it, or the Duke lacrosse team. I immediately think of those two. Those guys were immediately convicted before they were actually... They were presumed guilty until proven innocent, and that's not the way this country is supposed to work. You're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, okay? Innocent until proven guilty. So if we're going to cut Naquan Tomlin slack and what happened, okay, why don't we cut Richard Linton a little bit of slack and Gene Taylor and Jerome Tang or whoever you want to blame, cut them a little bit of slack too? Why is it that we only cut slack for one guy but not for anybody else? That's convenient, is it not?
Oh, for sure.
But why is it that you do that? Because this is what you believe. You are so, it's like you're all in and you think you're trapped and you're not allowed to change your mind. And you are. But people are so brainwashed to think that once I go down that road and I've said a few comments on social media that now I just can't admit I'm wrong. And trust me, that's the thing. If something comes out, we find out in a couple weeks or a couple months or a year from now, I guarantee those same K-State fans that threw Richard Linton under the mud and were protesting and saying sort of horrible things outside his house or who knows what else was done. And who knows what they said in letters to the Board of Regents, I'd be willing to bet that they're not going to send a letter apologizing.
No.
When they might be proven wrong.
Email saying I'm sorry,
yeah,
or calling
I'm sorry.
His office saying I'm sorry, I apologize
right.
for doing that.
Exactly. You're not going to get that. And that's just the way society is nowadays.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's pretty sad. Anyway.
Just doesn't add up. The last thing I'll say about it is, like, if this is all just over a scuffle with a bouncer,
yeah,
doesn't add up.
Doesn't add up.
There's a lot that
Correct.
Does not add up. That's
Correct.
All this is.
And that's what K-State, that people that are protesting believe it is.
Yeah.
And if they are proven to be right, then they are right in being upset.
Well, for sure, yeah.
But I just can't believe that that's the case. Just can't believe that's the case.
There's too many things that are like, no.
Because here, think about this. If it was just that you just said, why would Jerome Tang say we're treating it as a season-ending injury? He would leave it open like Bill Self does when he has guys. You know, remember Sylvia DeSosa? He's like, yeah, we hope to, you know, we'll play this out. And I mean, he never said, well, you know, the NCAA ain't going to get to it, so we're treating it as a season-ending injury. He didn't go that far.
No.
Because he knew there was a chance he was going to play, right?
Yeah.
Well, why would Jerome Tang say what he said? So there has to be more to it than just that, because in a normal situation, even Jerome Tang would never say something like that if that's exactly the thing, which tells you to me, if you believe in everything Jerome Tang says, you believe in the character of the man, you believe in what he just said that I played for you, talking to K-State fans about love and so forth and so on, okay, then why can't you believe him when he says, we're treating this like a season-ending injury, and don't put words in his mouth. He never said Tomlin was going to play this year. I still haven't heard that.
Yeah, the one.
So why would he say we're treating like a season-ending injury if he thought that there was a good chance he was going to come back? Why would he say that? Which means he's privy to more information than just the little simple thing you presented that apparently the fan base believes in. So if you start doing all the math and putting these things together, it's like, That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. The only thing he did say, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, is like anything, if Naquan plays this year, it's just a bonus.
Yeah.
That's all he said about it. He didn't say when. He said
if.
You know, if Naquan plays, it's a bonus, right?
Right.
We're treating it as a season-ending injury, but if he comes back, it's a bonus.
Which means you're not counting on it.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, K-State will try to deal with all of that, and they are going to Baton Rouge. Probably a good thing, maybe. K-State men's team's on the road, maybe.
And I hope that their focus is right.
Yeah.
Man, this is not good for the team,
no,
either.
It's not.
Like, everybody's like talking about all this, and I think that we lose track of what this actually means.
Thank
for
you.
The actual 12 or whatever guys that are actually on this team and having to play games right now during all this.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I hope they... I think the coaches will have them ready. There's no question about that. But I hope their mind's in the right spot and they can keep going, too, because it's not just one player that was affected here.
No. K-State 7-2 back on the court tomorrow at 12:30 against LSU in Baton Rouge. The Wildcats have started to get some clutch contributions from transfers Tyler Perry and Arthur Kaluma. Jerome Tang on the development of those two in the system.
Their winning DNA is what I thought it would be, right? And their buy-in is coming around. You know, and how we want to do it. Like, there's a lot of ways to win, but this is how we choose to do it. And they're buying into that more. And now we got to see, can we put 3, 4, 5, 6 games together of consistency?
K-State at LSU tomorrow at 12:30. Wichita State Shockers at home tomorrow against South Dakota State at 6 o'clock at Koch Arena. Wichita State 7-2 under first-year head coach Paul Mills. Women's basketball, number 13, K-State's 8-1. They face 7-3 Missouri in the Bill Snyder Classic at the Civic Arena in St. Joe, Missouri tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Also, women hoops on Sunday. It's an all-Kansas matchup. 4-5 Wichita State. Terry Nooner, former Jayhawk, against 4-4 Kansas. 1 o'clock on ESPN+. Terry Nooner is the new head coach of Wichita State women, if you didn't understand what I was trying to say there. Speaking of KU, they have a new offensive coordinator for the football team, and I tell you what, I think this is a heck of a hire. Jeff Grimes is among the top offensive coaches in the country. He had been named a finalist for the Frank Broyles Awards, awarded to the nation's top assistant coach in 2021 while he was at Baylor, and in 2020 at BYU. He was named coordinator of the year by Football Scoop in 2021. While at Baylor, Grimes helped lead the Bears to the 2021 Big 12 Championship, directing one of the most productive offensive attacks in the country. He comes to Kansas after 3 years at Baylor, where he served as the offensive coordinator and tight ends coach. Baylor's offensive attack in 2022 ranked among the top 10 in program history in several offensive categories. Prior to his 3 seasons at Baylor, Grimes directed a high-powered offense at BYU in 2020 that finished its season ranked in the top 15 of 10 different offensive statistical categories, including third in the nation in scoring, seventh in total offense. And you know who his quarterback was? Zach Wilson.
It was.
Mm-hmm. And he was the number 2 overall pick of the draft.
Too much going on in my mind. I would have never guessed it.
That's right. So Grimes now gets to work with Jalen Daniels. That sounds pretty promising if you're a KU fan, as long as Jalen doesn't trip over a cord and hurt his back or something. Sorry, that probably wasn't fair. NBA in-season tournament, the championship game is set. LeBron James last night with 30 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. Lakers blow out the Pelicans in the semis, 133-89. The Lakers advance to the in-season tournament championship Saturday in Vegas against the Pacers. Pacers knocked out the Bucks, 128-119. Tyrese Halliburton, remember that name. He used to play at Iowa State. He has become a star in the NBA. He is amazing. And just a few weeks before his 39th birthday, LeBron James yesterday became the first player in NBA history to put up at least 30 points, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds in 23 minutes or fewer. And not bad for a guy that's 39. And oh yeah, by the way, he didn't commit a single turnover. And you know what his plus minus was in the box score? Plus 36.
I was going to say 20.
Plus 36. That's insane. John Rahm officially joined LIV Golf on Thursday, defecting from the PGA Tour in a move that has shaken the foundation of the sport. This stands as the biggest move LIV Golf has made. Completely changes the dynamics of professional golf for both leagues going into 2024. Remember, they're supposed to be working together, and LIV Golf's investing in this and this, and I'm confused. But we did say when all this was put together and PGA Tour people were upset because LIV Golf was basically buying into the PGA Tour, that this isn't officially a done deal yet. And this doesn't help.
No, yeah, it's weird to me. I saw this thing yesterday, and I'm like, aren't they like consolidating their programs? And then this comes out, and it's like, well, I guess this is still a big deal. I did not know that.
No, me neither. I haven't followed as closely as I probably should have. This is the Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Kansas City Chiefs looking to bounce back from their loss at Green Bay last Sunday night. They hosted 6-6 Bills. The Chiefs are 8-4 right now. The 3 seed in the AFC. The Bills are on the outside looking in. This is a must-win for the Bills. I mean, it looks like the Chiefs can put the final nail in their coffin, or at least you would think so, because the Bills would have to run the table after that, and they still have a tough schedule. 2 o'clock pregame, 3:25 kickoff Sunday from Arrowhead. Andy Reid knows that the Bills, despite their struggles so far this year, an up-and-down team, he knows that they are dangerous and desperate.
Listen, their numbers are really good offensively and defensively in certain areas, very good. So they've been a little bit up and down. They're working through that, so yeah. But they're still a talented football team and a good football team, one we respect.
Okay, so let's talk about Chiefs game for just a few minutes here. The injury report is alarming. Isaiah Pacheco has not practiced this week with a shoulder, so I don't know if he's going to play Sunday, but it doesn't look very promising. Brian Cook, we know, is out with an ankle, but luckily it's not a season-ending injury, so he may be back for the playoffs, but he, of course, is out. So Mike Edwards has started at safety. Donovan Smith is out at left tackle with a neck injury. That means that Wanya Morris will play at left tackle and did pretty good, especially running the ball for the Chiefs the other day. But if you don't have Pacheco, so you get Morris, who's more of a run-dominated blocker, but then you have Clyde Edwards-Helaire instead of Pacheco. Are you going to run it as much as you did the last game? I would say probably not.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be up to Chiefs fans to freak out about Clyde Edwards-Helaire every time he carries it Sunday, or maybe he'll have a great game. He did have a great game against the Bills a few years ago in the rain up in Buffalo. Jerick McKinnon was back at practice yesterday, so that's important because the Chiefs need him to probably carry some of the load. More bad news, Drew Tranquil out, hasn't practiced this week due to a concussion, but good news is Nick Bolton was a full participant in practice, so maybe the timing of the injuries works good enough to where Bolton's back and Tranquil's out, just like when Bolton was out, Tranquil was in. So we shall see. The Bills have injuries, too. Von Miller's on an exempt list for his situation, but Justin Ross isn't. I don't understand that from the National Football League and how that all works. But the Bills are in a must-win situation. And I find it interesting how silly national people are, because I don't understand. I just want to say this. There are so many people that are even in small market radio or do other things on a lower level that could do some of the jobs that these national people do. There's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind because some of us actually do research. That's the important part. And actually watch and follow this stuff pretty closely. So there are people out there actually saying that this is a must win for the Chiefs. That couldn't be further from the truth. Is it now, if you say it's a must-win for the Chiefs in general, that couldn't be further from the truth. Now, if you say this is a must-win for the Chiefs to get the number one seed, that you're more than likely is correct, because then you have five losses. The Dolphins win this week. You're two games behind the Dolphins, even though you beat them head-to-head. Or if the Ravens win, you're two games behind the Ravens if you lose this game. But when you sit here and you say that the Chiefs aren't a must-win in general, that is completely and utterly false. They have a two-game lead in their division. It does not matter if there are two wildcard teams with a better record than the Kansas City Chiefs. No. It does not matter. The worst the Chiefs will be in the playoffs is the four seed. That's the worst they will be. Unless they completely gagged the division. They're up two games in the division right now over the Broncos. Three games over the Chargers and the Raiders. They split with the Broncos. So the Broncos don't have a tiebreaker against them. Neither do the Chargers or the Raiders. Chiefs have beaten them already. So the Chiefs have, in essence, a three-game lead over everybody, or four-game. And they have a two-game lead over the Broncos. And probably the second tiebreaker, I'm guessing the Chiefs probably own that too. So they probably have like a three-game lead. The Chiefs do not need to win against the Bills on Sunday to keep their hopes alive to win the division, or to keep their hopes alive to make the playoffs. The Buffalo Bills do.
Yeah.
Are you confused? The Bills are the team that is in a must win. They are 6-6. If they lose, they're 6-7 and could be two games out of the playoffs. And they only have four to play. And you're probably going to need 10 wins to make the playoffs, which means the Bills' room for error is gone if they lose to the Chiefs. They would have to go 4-0 the rest of the way against a tough schedule to get to 10-7. They are the one in a must-win to make the playoffs. The Chiefs are nowhere close to a must-win. If they lose, and let's even say the Broncos win, they still have a one-game lead in division. If they win out, guess what? They're the four seed at worst. Now, if you all caught up in, we got to be the number one seed to win the Super Bowl, which is bogus, but whatever. We got to, because you haven't been in the past and you've won the Super Bowl. Of course, the key there is the one seeds got upset in the divisional round and the Chiefs host the AFC title game. If you believe the Chiefs can't win a road game in the playoffs, then I understand this is a must win. If you believe the Chiefs cannot win a road game with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback and Andy Reid at coach, if you believe the Chiefs cannot win a road playoff game, then you're correct. This is a must-win Sunday against the Bills because you have to have the one seed. It's one seed or bust. But I saw Curtis Siebold, 810 WHB, put this out yesterday. I thought it was very good. He has a question on Twitter. And the question was, which one of these would you rather see? Would you rather see the Chiefs continue to play like they are, but somehow get the one seed and play the way they are in the playoffs? Or would you rather them be the three seed and improve to where it appears that they're playing better as they head into the playoffs? And I will take the second one.
No, yeah, for sure.
Because home field advantage only means so much. The Chiefs are not undefeated in AFC title game in the last 5 years. They're 3-2. And if not for a push in the back on Mahomes in the late in regulation and a Sky Moore punt return, they might be 2-3. We talked about before that AFC title game last year. How bad would it look when you have five straight AFC title games and you can't even win more than you lose? So the Chiefs have lost to the Patriots. They've lost to the Bengals at home in AFC title game with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. So being the number one seed doesn't guarantee you jack squat. Having home field throughout the playoffs doesn't guarantee you jack squat. Now, the Chiefs have had it to make it to three Super Bowls and win two, but they also had it and didn't make it to the Super Bowl on two other occasions. So can they win on the road? At some point, ladies and gentlemen, Chiefs fans, I don't know if you realize this, the odds are against the Chiefs hosting the AFC title game for every year for the rest of Patrick Mahomes' career. The odds are pretty slim on that, okay? So you're going to have to, at some point, Mahomes is going to have to win on the road in the playoffs. And of course they can. The Chiefs win on the road a lot during the regular season. Why can't they do it in the playoffs? They can. So I would rather them, if they end up losing the Bills Sunday, but then they figure things out the last few weeks and they go in as a three seed and they host the first round of the playoffs, and yeah, they'll have to play an extra game, so will everybody except the one seed, then I'm okay with that. But if they continue to plog along where they play one game really well and then one game where they lay an egg and then they somehow find a way to win and they somehow get the one seed because the Ravens start to fall apart or the Dolphins, Tua gets hurt, and they slide in backdoor as a one seed, I'm not going to feel as good about the Chiefs in that situation as I would if I know they're actually playing better.
Yeah,
I think people just automatically think if you're the one seed, you're automatically playing better. No, you're not. And this AFC is wide open, and the Chiefs should, honestly, I still think the Chiefs are the team to beat in this whole thing because of experience and been there, done that. The Ravens, I'm still waiting for Lamar Jackson to get hurt. I'm still waiting for Tua to bang his head against the turf. And the Dolphins haven't beat anybody with a winning record yet this year. Jury's out on them. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson has not played well in the playoffs in his career. Those are two teams ahead of you that would have home field. So do you think the Chiefs can't go to Miami and win? I think they can. Yeah. Can they go to Baltimore and win? I think they can. I mean, would it be a little bit tougher? Sure. But you know what? To win a championship, sometimes it's got to be tough. Now the Bills come to town. They've got everything to play for. The Chiefs have lost to the Packers. They rarely lose back-to-back games. Patrick Mahomes is 16-3 after a loss. Having said all that, I'm picking the Bills to win. Because I do think that there is way more urgency for the Bills than there is the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs want the one seed, don't get me wrong. But I think deep down they know that they've got bigger things to worry about than the one seed. The Bills have nothing to worry about except we got to get our butts in the playoffs, because you talk about the ultimate underachieving team with the talent we have. Before the season, people still thought the Bills, the Bengals, and the Chiefs were the best teams in the AFC. Well, the Bengals have a good excuse now with Burrow being hurt, although they got off to a bad start. What's the Bills' excuse? I mean, they have some injuries, but so does everybody. What's the Bills' excuse? So the Bills, you could say that so much pressure on them on Sunday that they might just wilt under the pressure, and that's possible. But to me, the Bills have way more to play for, way more sense of urgency than the Chiefs do on Sunday. You counter that with the Chiefs coming off a loss. You counter that with how badly do the Chiefs want the one seed. And technically, I mean, you don't want the Broncos to think, or anybody in the division, they can catch you. So I get that. But the Bills have way less room for error than the Chiefs. And then you add on the top that Pacheco might not. If Pacheco doesn't play, Brian Cook will not play. Donovan Smith will probably not play. Drew Tranquil will not play. Jerry McKinnon is banged up. Nick Bolton is coming back from a broken wrist. How effective will he be? And the wide receivers, as we know, in particular Sky Moore, doesn't know how to actually run through a full route. And MBS is spun like a top every time he tries to catch a deep ball. And Kelsey is not the same player he once was. And you got a rookie at left tackle. Why should I pick the Chiefs to win this game? And the reason would be 15.
And that's the reason most years, too.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with... And listen, I'll listen to your argument. I'm just going to go with a quick synopsis of this one. Wade, I'm going to say we have 15 and they don't. Yeah, they have Josh Allen. He's pretty good.
There's going to be like people that are going to do that all the time, right? Like, we have 15. And people will do that even in games where it's out of reach in your mind, like the Broncos game when Sky Moore muffed a punt and they scored a touchdown right away.
Yeah.
You can't say this game was over with the muff punt. You have 15. I had that discussion with somebody.
Right.
And I get, yeah.
Which I get to thinking.
It's like, you can't be hypocritical and say that you can't come back. I'm like, no, I base my thought process on what's actually going on during the game.
Right.
If I'm in the game. Before the game here, then yeah, I might say, hey, because of 15. I feel weird about, like, I don't like the injury situation. Obviously, with the Chiefs, that's an issue. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some problems there, I think, and that would be where I'd be hesitant to pick the Chiefs to win more than the Bills' sense of urgency, because I think the Bills have had a sense of urgency a lot this year.
Yeah.
And Josh Allen has made a lot of mistakes in that sense of urgency.
In fairness to Josh Allen, it's a lot of it is on his shoulders with all the injuries.
Absolutely.
They have. He has made some amazing plays. I mean, they should have beat the Eagles. All the penalties. I mean, Josh Allen played great in that game.
Yeah. I'm not saying that he's not made plays and done good things.
Right.
But it is. You're right. That is in fairness to him. It is on his back, and it still is on his back. And
which
so,
maybe it will be on Mahomes' back, too, because he can't get receivers to get open, so he's got to run the ball more like he has been.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I don't know. I feel like that the Bills are just, it's not there for them this year, and their sense of urgency is detrimental to them. and I think that Josh Allen on Sunday might do too much, try to do too much, and I think the Chiefs are going to win it by, like, you know, field goal, touchdown, whatever, but like you say, they don't lose back-to-back games a lot. I know they have injuries, but I don't know. I like the Chiefs in this game. A lot of that is gut for some reason. I don't know why, but I do. I feel like the Bills are going to make some mistakes here that you know, if they were in a better position, maybe they wouldn't.
Something that a lot of people are not talking about, and I think this is important, and I'm going to bring this to the forefront, and I don't see the talking heads talking about this. I'm not trying to make excuses, but think about this for a second. The Chiefs just lost to the Packers. The Packers played on Thanksgiving Day and had 3 extra days to prepare for the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills are coming off a full week of bye. They've had 2 weeks to prepare for the Chiefs, and they've won at Arrowhead before during the regular season with Josh Allen against Patrick Mahomes. After this game against the Bills, the Chiefs will play New England, who just played on Thursday night. They will have 3 extra days of rest, and the Chiefs got to travel to New England. Look at the stretch the Chiefs have. We talk about the teams don't look tough, but the travel's not. Well, the travel's fine, but the Packers. The Packers had 3 extra days to get healthier and get prepared for the Chiefs. The Bills had a whole extra week to prepare for the Chiefs. The Chiefs are coming off of playing a game. Their bye was earlier in the year. And the Patriots will have 3 extra days to prepare for the Chiefs as well. I think that plays a role in some of this stuff. I'm not saying that the Chiefs can't win these games. They have in the past. But I think the Chiefs' room for error is a little smaller than some years because the offense has not been nearly as good.
No, there's no doubt
about
that.
The defense has obviously covered up some of those warts. But it should be pointed out that this will be the second straight team that will have way more time to prepare and rest. And next week will be a third straight opponent. And 2 of the 3, the Chiefs had to travel.
Yeah.
So, is that having an impact, maybe, and could? I think so, especially with the Chiefs having the injuries they have.
Yeah, for sure. It could. I mean, I think
I hope
any
the Chiefs win.
My
head tells me the Chiefs, my head tells me the Chiefs are going to have to play extremely well to win without the guys they got. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do win. And I know we say we got 15, but 15 can't throw and catch the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the issue all year, right?
Right.
Like, somebody's got to catch the ball for them. And
somebody's got to run the route.
Somebody's got to get open for them.
Yes.
And Travis Kelce, the only one. You know, it used to be fun. Like, Tyreek could actually do this, right? Like, he knew to keep plays going, right?
Yes.
Like, and so, you know, I get tired of people bringing that up. But, you know, he was in this conversation of who's on this team that knows how to get Juju knew how to get open.
Yeah.
You know, like he
put more pressure on the defense,
extend a play and get open. There's not, other than Travis Kelce, a guy on this team that's working to get open on extended plays.
Rice is starting.
He'll get to that point, right. I think, if he keeps developing the way he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, Travis Kelce is the guy that knows where to go, where to be pretty much at all times if he can get there.
Right.
And so that's a major thing with this team and trying to complete passes and get that game working offensively is that you've got to help him out. And if you don't help Mahomes out, you're going to have some problems. And that's shown in quite a few games this year.
I got the Bills winning 26-23.
I'll say 27-24 Chiefs.
All right. I hope you're right, and I hope I'm wrong. The 2 o'clock pregame on Z9 6.3 The Lake. You're home for the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Other games in the NFL coming up on Sunday. Buccaneers are at the Falcons. Who wants to win that division?
Bucks, who knows?
Bucks need to win that one. Rams at the Ravens. Rams are playing a lot better. The Ravens are 9-3. Wouldn't it be something if the Chiefs ended up losing and the Dolphins and Ravens both lost as well? And the Chiefs would, and then that would take, that erase completely the whole, we got a must win to be a one seed.
Because
that can happen. Ravens lost, they've lost to the Browns, and they the Ravens aren't invincible. Rams at the Ravens, Rams are fighting for their playoff lives. Lions are at the Bears, Lions are 9-3. Colts at the Bengals, that's a big game there. I'm cheering for the Colts to win that one myself. The Jaguars are at the Browns, that's an interesting game. Trevor Lawrence, they say he might actually could play Sunday, which is insane. By the way, there are a lot of people talking about, what, the Jacksonville doesn't have a cart to take the guy off the field? Trevor Lawrence said after the game, he refused the cart. That's why he did what he did. So see, people jumping to conclusions without all the facts, huh?
Yeah.
That never happens. Panthers are at the Saints. Who cares? Texans are at the Jets. Texans should get a win there. Vikings are at the Raiders. The Seahawks are at the Niners. Seahawks in a must win. The Bills at the Chiefs, as we know. Broncos at the Chargers. If you're a Chiefs fan, if you're worried about anybody catching you, I guess you cheer for the Chargers in that one. Eagles at the Cowboys is a gigantic game on Sunday Night Football. The Eagles right now are the one seed. The Cowboys are a game back. If the Cowboys beat the Eagles, the Niners become the one seed, assuming they beat the Seahawks. The Cowboys then would become the two seed. And the Eagles would drop to a five because division winners over the wild card team. So the Eagles won earlier this year in Philadelphia. A gigantic game, Eagles-Cowboys.
It's December. Give me the Eagles.
Yeah, exactly. And the Cowboys, they haven't beaten a team with a winning record yet this year. They beat the Seahawks, I guess. Technically, they're 6-5. Now they're 6-6. Titans are taking on the Dolphins Monday Night Football there in Miami. And the Packers are taking on the Giants. So there's two Monday Night games on December the 11th. And we end, believe it or not, with baseball news. Let me pull this up. Ken Rosenthal is reporting that the Royals are looking to add a significant piece to their starting rotation via trade. They've been engaged in talks with the Marlins and the Mariners, and he is reporting that MJ Melendez, Michael Massey, and Freddie Fermin are on the table as trade bait, but says that Mikel Garcia and Vinny Pascatino are unlikely to be on the trade table. Agree or disagree with that?
Oh, man, I saw the tweet when you put it out, and it's like, well, I hope they don't get rid of Melendez and Fermin and everybody at the same time. We need a catcher on this team, and I know Melendez isn't a catcher anymore. But
yeah. They said that he'd be outfielder again this year.
Yeah.
I'm okay with trading Melendez if it can get you a really good
starting
pitcher.
Melendez for sure. Like, I don't know that
not
I
all
get
three of them.
I don't want to get rid of Fermin at this point.
Well, I like Massey, too, myself. But I think
I'm just saying
the point
as
you can
catcher,
find
right?
You can find a veteran catcher to fill the void if you have to, I guess, is the thinking.
Yeah.
Or a guy that's really good at calling.
Salvi's still on the team, but he's not going to play every day at catcher.
That's
so
true.
And that's, you know, I don't know. That's just a personal thing for me, probably in my mind. It probably doesn't even really mean anything. But And I don't really want to get rid of Massey either, but yeah, definitely not Pascatino.
I like Garcia a lot. Yeah. I wouldn't trade him either.
Oh, no, Mikel Garcia is not. Yeah. He would be off of my block for sure. Like, there's no way I'd.
Listen,
he really picked things up as the season went on.
I hear that Brent Maine is in terrific shape. And Sal Fasano might come out of retirement. He's a catcher's coach for, I think, the Phillies or somebody. But bring back these old catchers. Drew Butera. I mean, come on. We can fit anybody in there. Just give Salvi a few days off.
Go get Benito Santiago.
Again. Oh, yes. That worked out so
turn
well.
Turn everything around in 2004. Let's do it.
Juan Gonzalez and Benito Santiago after the Royals had a winning year in 2003 and led the division by 7.5 games. And then in 2004, it was I believe. And you brought in those two guys. And what was it, 25 games a season? Tony Pena didn't believe and quit. That was a good year. Chiefs or Royals lost like 106 games that year. I think it was the worst year they ever had. So no Santiago. Brent Maine, Mike McFarlane. We can go way back. Let's just go pull up all the old catchers to replace Freddie Fermin if we have to.
Jamie Quirk, right?
There's a good one. Jamie Quirk. Bill Pecota played catcher, emergency catcher every once in a while. He was a utility guy. I mean, whatever it takes for us to get a stud starting pitcher. Yeah. Listen, if we got to trade Michael Massey, Freddie Fermin, and MJ Melendez for a stud number one pitcher, sign me up.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.